This is Film Survival, the podcast. I'm Eva Zimson. What is this podcast about? It's about how to survive and thrive in a creative career. It's about what it takes to actually make it in this industry. It's the war stories. It's filmmakers talking about their careers and how they got where they are. It's about pounding the pavement and learning to love that process. In this episode, you'll see how important it is to commit yourself to your goals by writing them down and planning out the milestones of your career. You might be wondering why this podcast is called Film/Survival. And the slash is actually very important because this is based on an exercise I do with all my students when we're talking about their career planning. And that is that you have to have a 10-year plan that is in two columns, one being film and the other being survival. It is critical in the film industry to actually be able to work for free for the first little while. Some people, you know, think, well, it's not great to be working for free, but I will tell you why it is. If you're working for free, you're going to get the opportunities in the positions that you want. There are certainly different ways of entering the film industry, so it kind of does depend which stream, and we can talk about that. But basically, you need to be able to survive on some kind of a money job that I call like the complementary job to fund your life and be able to survive. So usually that survival job should be something very flexible, something that if you have to quit it, it is not going to burn a bridge in the film industry. So sometimes people end up putting a film job in that survival column, and I don't think that's a good idea because you never want to burn a bridge in the industry. It's a very small industry, so you have to keep those two worlds separate. That is why you'll see a lot of actors as waiters, because they, number one, you know, they have auditions at the weirdest times, so it's good for them to work mainly at night. If they have to, if they get a great job, they will either be able to schedule around it or they quit that job, you know, the survival job for the film role, because that is what they have to dedicate their life to. And the same goes for anyone working in crew roles. So ideally, maybe you have a job that could be like a graphic designer, if you're an editor or something, where you're doing graphic work at on your time, on your schedule. The more flexible that survival job is, the better. In the film industry, you really should be taking as many positions as possible. People sometimes say to me, you know, I don't even know what I want to do in 10 years, because I say you got to start with the end first. So what do you want to be in 10 years? Who is that person? Just maybe it's your mentor, the person that you look up to. You want to be that person. So you got to work backwards. What do you have to do? What do you have to achieve in 5 years to get to the 10th year? That is the question. And the first thing you want to do is figure out, okay, where am I beginning? A lot of people in film, they start in an internship as part of a school program. So that's ideal, because a lot of companies actually don't even want to take you unless you're getting credit for it. But believe it or not, you can actually work your way into most companies without being enrolled in a program. It just depends on your approach. So it is very important to pick that first internship wisely and in line with what you want to do in 10 years. People think that's a little absurd. You know, of course you can change your mind down the way, but the kind of connections you make in that first job and that internship are supposed to be actually leading you to lifelong relationships. And ideally, let's say you want to go into post sound, you should be in a post sound facility or a production house, something like that, where you are going to make connections with like the senior people. They're going to see you work. I call an internship, it's almost like you get to skip 10 floors. And you didn't even have to walk up there. They just gave you that in, and now you walk through it. And you have to make the best possible impression. You have to put your best foot forward. You want to shine. That first day, even, is so critical. The people who really take those internships and excel in them in that sense are the ones that are often offered permanent positions. They are the ones where someone can zone in on you and know that you're going to be a star, you know, and this is the beginning of your career. One of the other reasons to make a 10-year plan is to keep yourself on track. Again, you don't have to commit to things in stone completely, but I would argue that this plan is designed to keep you really strategically moving forward to a specific position. So an example I like to use is, what if you are, you know, just out in the industry and what your goal is to work in, your goal is to work as a first assistant director, let's say, and the season is starting up, the summer is gearing up, everybody's hiring, and suddenly you get a call from a producer who says, we have a great opportunity for you. We want to take you to Thailand and you're going to be the camera person. What do you do? What do you do? So you've maybe put in some time already in the Directors Guild of Canada, training, all of the stuff that you have to do to even get in there. And now you get an opportunity to fly to Thailand and be the camera operator. And when I put this to my students, often they say, I'm going to Thailand. There's no question. I always say, sure, you can definitely go to Thailand and you can come back, but you have to be aware you might miss that season because people do call you and hire, and if you don't answer your phone a couple times, they'll never call you again. I actually had that happen when I went back to school after sort of my first year in the film industry, which was before I even went to undergrad. So it wasn't really going back to school. It was starting. And I ended up getting all these calls for assistant directing and also PAing. It was depending on the production level. And I felt so badly. I had to say no. And within two times of saying no, I didn't get any more calls. But before that, I was getting calls almost on a weekly basis. So your name gets out there and you have to be around. You know what? A good question is whether you should stay, you know, where your comfort zone is, the city you've always lived, maybe where you studied, or should you go to LA? I get that question all the time. Should I move to LA? Or sometimes I get, should I move to Hamilton? So I'll address both questions. So should you move to LA? What I did is I just went to LA. Okay, I bought a plane ticket. I actually used it to kind of check out graduate schools as well. But there is this mystique about Los Angeles and Hollywood that almost every film person has. And the moment you land in LA and you come through the layer of smog, actually, that is above LA, it becomes very real and you realize what it is and what it isn't. And when you meet people in the industry, you realize it's a very, very tough industry. LA could eat you alive. And the advice that I got from a lot of people is become famous in your own town. Become famous in Toronto, in Canada, and then come here. In fact, you want to be invited. You want agents to be calling you and saying, we want to work with you. To go down there without, let's say, work permits and try and make it. I have seen people do it. It is very tough. I've heard of people marrying people, you know, just to get status and all of that. So my advice is actually get it out of your system. Go down there, meet people, try to have meetings, see what happens. Maybe there's some kind of cool connection that leads you to something. So that's the other part of this is you must take risks. You have to take risks all the time to get something. No pain, no gain. You know, if you don't put yourself out there, you're obviously not going to get anything back. So go to LA, see what happens. And that journey alone is going to give you so much information, so much experience that you will take back. And it will inform how you operate here in Toronto, let's say. This is applicable anywhere in the world. And I think so many people do test out the waters in Los Angeles, Hollywood. Whether you should go to a small town from Toronto, that's another good example. So the good thing about going to a small town is there will be less competition, but there's also less demand. So you're not going to have as much work. The more common approach is that people come from small towns to the bigger cities and work where the work is. But sometimes people move out because they have children, they move back to family. So sometimes they'll go back after a few years of working and start their own business, maybe local films or whatever. So There's all kinds of approaches. And again, I say, look back at your plan, see where you're supposed to go. This plan is really designed to keep you on track. And there are so many things you have to do on that track. So you have to create milestones for each year. Each year should have its own little mini plan. You know, what are you going to do? What kind of professional development are you doing? What kind of networking are you doing? Are you attending conferences? Are you subscribing to certain, let's say, educational sources, industry trades in that area? Who are you meeting with? Who are you actively pursuing as mentors? You change it accordingly. Some people actually have the desire to be, let's say, an editor and a camera person, a DOP or, you know, lighting. How can you do both? Well, in the industry, if you get to the bigger budget stuff, there's no way that somebody is an expert editor and an expert DOP. However, there are some people who work on smaller scale stuff, let's say even smaller production companies, corporate, that kind of stuff, where that is the kind of thing people look for. They want you to be able to do almost everything, like a jack of all trades. But inevitably, that sometimes also means a master of none. Some people would say they've mastered both. But anyway, you know what I mean. One time I was on Facebook and a former student of mine messaged me and she seemed really down. And, you know, I asked her what she's up to. And she said, you know, really, my 10-year plan is not panning out. And I didn't anticipate, you know, breaking up with my boyfriend and then my citizenship not, you know, coming through as I had thought. And nothing's working out. And it was such a kind of beautiful moment that reminded me, too, when I'm always talking about plans, is that life just kind of happens and sometimes it doesn't go the way you plan it. I personally believe that if you have this kind of planning in front of you, it is almost impossible to not go somewhere in the film industry. If you are that strategic about each move and meticulous about what you're doing every day to get to that goal, in my opinion, it's fail-safe unless something really bad happens, which can happen, and then you can readjust. But then that's what this is about, is learning how to be strategic and figuring out new paths. So if it isn't working out in one, or let's say you decided I'm going to go for editing more than DOP, then you streamline that and the plan will change. Your column will widen. And now you have so many more things to do just for editing. And you'll probably feel relieved because you can kind of rely on the steps that are in front of you and they will lead you there. And it's about just doing the work, being disciplined each and every day to get there. And I would say, you know what, dream big. Most people in this film industry and any art, I guess, but definitely the film industry, it is made for dreamers. You have to have a big dream and you got to follow it. You will not be able to live with yourself if you don't follow your dream. I know that I had my little midlife crisis where I thought, oh my God, I can't take one more rejection to a funding application. I can't go through this again. And then I even contemplated other things. I thought about going to med school, getting out of film altogether. And eventually I came to the conclusion in my heart that there's nothing else I really want to do except for, of course, teaching, which is like a real calling along with filmmaking. But I can't see my life any other way and I don't think I would be happy. And you will know when you love your job, because sometimes you'll find yourself on a set at the 14th hour and you feel like this wave of euphoria, even though your feet are probably bleeding and you're dehydrated and you have a headache and all of that. It doesn't matter. You're euphoric. This is the best life you could have. It's like kind of a divine moment. And so those are the moments we live for. And hopefully you're having those kind of moments along the path of getting to the goal. And I must say the most important part is the people you meet. The people, the connections that you make along the way of this 10-year plan is what it's all about. So hopefully your plan is about meeting a lot of people, getting on projects, taking risks, putting yourself out there, making sure that you try new things and push your boundaries. I remember when I was starting out, I literally showed up as a PA and I on a very, very low budget film turned into the casting director by the next day. I didn't know how to cast, so I got out of Yellow Pages. This was before the internet, dear God. And I had to get the Yellow Pages out. I looked up agents. I called them up. I said, you know, we're casting this independent film. And then they said, well, do you have a breakdown? And I said, what's a breakdown? And they explained it. And then I sent it over. I faxed it. The producers, because they were so happy and impressed with my free labor, they made me the first assistant director. Again, I had no idea what this position really entails. And one other person on the crew who had just graduated from Niagara College, she was the continuity person. So she, in a day, taught me how to be a first assistant director. She taught me the Movie Magic scheduling software, which I thought was revolutionary. I mean, I'm such an organizer that this software was great. And I picked it up. It was a challenge. You know, we had 25 people on almost no money. We had a driver. I had to create a driving schedule every day. It was nuts. But I learned through that process. So then I got a chance to first AD at the Canadian Film Center, which is really 10 notches above the level of production I was working on. And I was really scared. I mean, I got the connection through a friend who was one of the editors there, and they pegged me as a first AD, and I showed up, and I was scared, and I looked at the director and looked at the crew. They were just looking at me, waiting for me to call it. And I said, well, I guess we should unload the truck. That seemed like a logical thing to do. So that's how I started. And then I just kind of did what I knew how to do, which is just run the set and get it in on time and make everyone's job easier for them. So that's what I did. But I got to tell you, those first few minutes, I was nearly vomiting. And that's actually a good feeling. If you feel like vomiting before every job you have, then it's a good sign. Because Deepa Mehta said this once, that before she directs a film, every morning, I think she actually does vomit, which is crazy. And that's humbling. You know, someone like her who is still nervous when she goes on a set, that is inspirational for us all. And I personally have that feeling, you know, often when I'm doing my little instigator things, like trying to meet Larry David or Lars von Trier, I feel my entire chest is going to explode. I feel so nervous. And if you're feeling that consistently, then I think you're doing a good job. I think you're going far, and you have to do that in this industry. So in the end, I just want to sum it up. Because some people say, well, what happens if I don't ever achieve my 10-year goal and I became something else? Well, I would say that happened to me to some extent. You know, I wanted to have had 2 feature films under my belt after the 10 years, and I'm still working on a feature film. I discovered how difficult it is to make a feature film. And I'm actually not giving up at all, but life kind of changes sometimes. So for a while there, after I came back and from my master's in England, I ended up doing a lot of teaching. And initially, I thought it was sort of a complimentary job. This was how I was paying my bills. And, you know, slowly but surely, I ended up really loving teaching and dedicating most of my years after year 5 to teaching. And then I remember being in Bhutan, and the government of Bhutan helped fly me out there. And I was teaching screenwriting to a bunch of Bhutanese students. And I had this moment of absolute enlightenment. And of course, you're going to have this in Bhutan, the happiest country in the world. But I literally felt like every moment that I had experienced in my life led me to that point. And it was such a profound feeling of acceptance of how my life panned out and how I absolutely love teaching. And it's one of my core callings along with filmmaking. And it's completely intertwined. They're connected. I would think that all people should have a moment like this at some point where you realize that even when you did go to Thailand and you took that sound job or whatever it was, or camera job, instead of being back in Toronto, it actually contributed to whatever you ended up doing. Thank you for listening. On the next episode of Film Survival, I'm going to talk about Cannes and Berlin with firsthand tips on how to navigate these festivals on a budget and as an emerging filmmaker. You can find more information on episodes, workshops, and private consulting at filmsurvival.com.